Welcome back to the Physio Matters podcast. My name is Jack March and this is session 103. Hello everybody and welcome back to the Physio Matters podcast, and I am mad excited to be back behind the microphone. Not done it for a little while, and we're going to talk about things that I am personally interested in. So osteoarthritis, of course. In this session of the Physio Matters podcast, we are going to talk to Giles Leeming, who is a clinical specialist orthotist working for OSSA UK, and he is involved in designing and managing unloader braces. Particularly in this, we are going to talk about medial unloader braces for the knee and how they might help osteoarthritis, who they might help, when we should offer them to patients, and how we might improve the outcomes with these braces. We do try to delve into how the braces might work in osteoarthritis, and also I try to play devil's advocate a little bit on how they may or may not interact with the biological system of a human. Really enjoyed this episode. If you want to find out more from OSSA, who we are super grateful for sponsoring this episode, then there is a link in the show notes, or you can just go to ossa.com, but the link in the show notes will take you specifically to their Unloader 1X brace, which is their newest medial offloader brace, and that's the one that we talk about mostly with Giles in this session, and it's pretty impressive, if you ask me, from the way it looks, the way it handles, the way it functions. And if you stick right to the end of the episode, if you're watching on YouTube, then you can see the brace in action a little bit on some of our patients. Then you can see the brace in action on one of our patients as well. I'll be back at the end for a bit of a debrief. Don't forget to check out everything related to Physio Matters. Just go to physio-matters.com, especially the events we've got coming up. And I will see you at the end of the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Giles today, and we're going to talk all about offloader braces, mainly medial offloader braces for knee pain, specifically osteoarthritis. So first order of business, I suppose, Giles, would you mind introducing yourself to the audience and what your day-to-day job is?
So my name's Giles Leeming. I'm a clinical specialist orthotist with OSSA. I'm in a clinical role within a manufacturer of orthoses, and we effectively are supporting clinicians and supporting patients to get the best outcomes from braces, basically.
Perfect. And so what was your normal, if there is such a thing as a normal day, what would that look like?
So it's a bit of a mix, really. I used to work in North Europe, and I was basically one of those people that came and troubleshooted and turned up and hopefully fixed complex problems with a lot of our orthoses, and a lot of training. My job in the last 18 months or so has changed a little bit. So I work for the Global Academy. So we do a lot of sort of training and education, a lot of sort of digital training, these types of things. So less patient than I used to be, but yeah, certainly all very much orthotic related throughout.
And so with regards to the braces themselves, mm-hmm. So like I say, I want to kind of concentrate on the medial offloader braces, just for simplicity's sake. I know there are other types as well. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit just generally about the construction of a medial offloader brace, what the aim of that is, and then we can go from there.
Okay, so effectively with a medial unloader, what we're trying to do is really affect and change where the load is being taken within the joint. So you have, in this case, medial osteoarthritis. The joint is damaged as a part of the disease process. And effectively, you know, you have another compartment to some extent that is perhaps more able to take that load. What the brace is trying to do is try and reduce the load on the pain creating area, basically. So it's trying to affect the pain for the patient, and that's the ultimate aim for them, really. You're trying to reduce the pain target the cause of the pain rather than, for example, you know, the mainstay of treatment for osteoarthritis is often sort of pain medication and these sorts of things. They're really aiming at the symptom. They're not actually sort of affecting the biomechanical cause of the problem. So with an orthosis, it's very, very specific to that joint. And it really is trying to mechanically change how the load is borne through that joint.
And we've seen, you know, Google braces and there is a billion variations from your humble piece of elastic up to, I'd say a medial offloader brace is probably up there with the most technical, isn't it, for these kind of conditions. So tell me a little bit about, just to begin with, what's the kind of main, would you say the main difference between the cheaper braces and, you know, marketing would say anything. I mean, we've all read, they probably somewhere on some of them say they offload the joint somehow. Yes. So what would be the main differences, would you say, there from that kind of actual mechanical perspective?
So it's a tricky area. So any orthoses is basically lumped together in the eyes of patients and to some extent in the eyes of clinicians. And the important thing to think about is, what effect is it having? So, you know, a sleeve, you're effectively going to be applying a compressive force. You're going to have a proprioceptive benefit for that patient. However, it's not affecting any mechanical change. It's not really affecting how the joint functions in any way. The kind of next progression from that is, again, kind of sleeve-based, but something with hinges, perhaps a little bit more supportive, perhaps a little bit more mechanical stability. And certainly historically, you would then think about a brace that's much stronger. So, you know, we always use the example of sort of skiing braces, for example. So a very strong, very rigid frame designed to stabilize that joint. And that's kind of where arthritis braces started, really. They took these rigid braces and changed a few pads, changed a few straps maybe, and then tried to use them for these types of patients, for patients with OA. But the reality is, it's important to have something that's designed from the ground up for the patient group. So if you think about someone with OA, they may have associated hand conditions, you know, poor dexterity, for example. It needs to fit in with their life in a way that a big bulky brace might not. So with OA braces, true OA braces, they're designed very much from the ground up to suit not only the mechanics of what's going on, but also really trying to think about the patient group. You know, not too complicated, not too many straps, not lots of Velcro, these types of things. Because effectively, a lot of patients rely on them and they need to wear them day to day. So we need to make them something that's quick, easy, and fits in with their lifestyle. So I think there's a lot more sort of holistic considerations with that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think every physio and probably orthotist as well remembers trying to fit an ACL brace after surgery and all the millions of bits of Velcro. And then trying to get someone to do that for themselves, it's not very easy, is it?
It's always the look of horror on the patient's eyes when you're putting something complex together and they're like, do I have to do this afterwards? And, you know, with any orthosis, obviously the reason you're fitting it is important, but it's important to think about patient suitability. Just because there are patients that aren't suitable for these types of devices. You know, it's not like a pill that you take in the morning. It requires a level of commitment. And it's important that they're used in the right patients. You'll get the best outcomes from there. So
yeah, let's follow that train of thought. So describe an ideal patient for me for a medial unloader, I suppose.
So effectively, the important thing is diagnostics, really. Making sure that you have a patient that is diagnosed, in this case, with medial OA. So this, traditionally, it would always be, you know, have we had a radiograph or whatever? The reality is, probably a clinical assessment is much more accurate. So you've isolated the fact that there is one compartment of the knee that is affected. And then there are other considerations that you need to think of. So from a patient point of view, are they likely to be able to fit it into their lifestyle? And that kind of takes on all sorts of things. So, you know, if they're wearing very, very tightly fitted clothing, then and that's a very big part of their life. I know a strange thing to say, but we regularly get asked these types of things. perhaps that this isn't the type of thing that they would go for, but in reality, it would fit with normal clothing and that type of thing. So it's important to consider the patient themselves. Mm-hmm. Things like dexterity and that sort of thing do come into play, but there are options with that. But really, you want good skin condition, and trying to avoid things where you have. It's not necessarily a contraindication, but sensitivity issues, so any neurological impairments or volume changes can also, it's not a contraindication, but lack of sensation and volume changes in the leg is something that requires a higher level of maintenance, both from the patient and from the clinician. So it's not sort of rigid contraindications as such, but they're just something to consider.
Perfect. And does it seem to work differently or better, or is it tolerated better in people with slightly different profiles? So something like if someone's got more activity-related pain versus more rest-related pain, for mm-hmm. as a real blunt or they're more active versus less active, is there any sort of patient populations they seem to be better in their point of view?
If you take, for example, the Unloader One, which has been around for 40 years, when it was first designed, we were thinking, it needs to be used for sort of relatively low to moderate Kelvin-Lawrence grades, for example. And it actually has been found to be suitable for all grades. And that was kind of originally a bit of a surprise, really, because even for us as a company that has designed these types of braces, we were expecting the efficacy to be more suited to those lower grades. But in reality, sort of load reduction is likely to be beneficial for any patient group with osteoarthritis, for example. Just again, going back to the mainstay of normal treatment, one of the first things that you would do when you go and see your GP is they, if appropriate, would probably discuss weight management, these types of things. And effectively, a brace is a way of addressing that relatively quickly and relatively easily. It's to do with that, really.
Yeah, so it can be more broadly applied, really, is what you're saying, than just sort of people that want a lot out of their osteoarthritic knee.
Yeah, and it's we have a real range of patients, and they change from someone who gets up, puts their brace on, does not take it off until they go to bed. And we have other patients that just put it on to go and walk the dog or do a specific activity. And it's always something I try to guide patients with and just say, it should fit in with your lifestyle. You should use it when it suits you. And it's sort of, it's very hard for us as clinicians to say definitively wear it at this time, because their pain, their activity is so personal to them. I'm always kind of saying it should fit in with your lifestyle. There will be times where you don't want a thing on your leg, or equally, you may want to be wearing it for longer periods of time because you know you're going to be doing an activity that would normally test your knee a little bit more. Yeah. So it is about educating the patient, getting them to know and trust the limitations of the brace as well, and get to know what it does and get it to fit in with their lifestyle.
Perfect. I'm just going to sidebar slightly in something you said there about wearing them for quite long periods of time. Mm-hmm. Something that I get questions of when I teach on osteoarthritis and I suggest bracing or supports is an option to use. Particularly physiotherapists for some reason, but they'll come back and say, well, what if people wear it too much, then their muscles won't do the job. I don't know if it's an extension from the cervical collars or something like that. And it's suddenly like, oh, you've put a brace on your knee, so your muscles aren't going to do the job. Mm-hmm. Any evidence for that at all?
So basically from an orthotic point of view, my understanding of this, and this isn't conclusive, this is just what I understand, but basically, from a knee point of view, this very much stems from the very widespread use of ligament braces at some stage. So when I first qualified, lots of ligament braces were used post-operatively, and that's perhaps declined in the last few years. But one of the reasons for that is you did used to see patients with significant quad wastage associated with long-term ligament brace wearing, basically. But it's very different with an unloading orthosis. You're not actually you're not actually it's very different with an unloading orthosis, because you're effectively applying a medialateral force to the knee. You're not truly affecting the sagittal, you know, range or whatever. There is a degree of resistance as you get to full extension. But aside from that, you're not actually changing how the knee is functioning in normal function, if you see what I mean. So the patient is actually able to do the normal things that they would do potentially without the pain. And that really is where it comes in. And I think there has been a little bit of research looked at sort of muscle power and that side of type of thing. And the quality of those types of papers is perhaps not where it's at. But they actually found that there was an increase in muscle power. The difficulty with that is it didn't really look into whether it was associated with the mechanism of the brace, yeah, or whether it was associated with, potentially if you're in less pain, you might be more active, therefore you get an associated increase in strength. But I think for this type of brace, it's a very different thing. Its use in physiotherapy is an area that we talk about a lot, just because OA is a disease that you really want a multitude of inputs to get the best possible outcome. So if perhaps the pain is preventing you from participating fully in your physiotherapy, if you're able to get a brace that can help them get more from their physio without that pain limitation, you're likely to get knock-on benefits with that. So I'm always a little nervous when people say, I've been given a brace, I've been told to take it off when I do physiotherapy or whatever. Obviously there are some areas where you should, but if it's weight bearing and there's really no reason why potentially you couldn't keep it on and use the beneficial effects of it while you're doing it.
Yeah, I think for me it's always been that you mentioned about the trade-off. So it's got to be better for your muscle function to be more active than to not wear your brace for a few minutes. Yeah. Like, in my opinion, like, if you can reduce symptoms 20-30% or some whatever number I'm just going to pick out of the air, that's got to be better. You know, if you, let's make it even more, let's say you could walk 20% more, that's gonna be way better for your knee function and your muscle function than not walking 20% more.
And you use the example of say a cervical orthosis, for example. I used to deal a lot with these types of things, and you'd take them off and the patient would say, oh, my head feels very heavy. A very different approach. You're aiming for immobilization with that. With an unloading brace, you're not restricting sagittal function in any way at all. You're wanting them to be active. All you're doing is applying a medialateral force to a knee, so it doesn't really affect that. So it's a very different thing, but I can totally understand how people draw that parallel.
Yeah, for sure. Lovely. So I want to talk a bit about, there's two components to how the braces work. I want to talk literally how the braces work. So what are they doing to the knee from a mechanical point of view? And then we'll talk about sort of symptoms and a biomechanical point of view, I suppose.
Yep.
So just talk me through. So you've just said to us there that we're providing a medialateral force onto the knee. How does the brace do that on a mechanical level? What is the brace? How is it built so that it applies that force?
Okay, so orthotists always talk about this three-point pressure effectively. And the way to consider that is if you're trying to effectively bend a straight piece, you would have to apply three points of pressure. So if you hold a pen in front of yourself, you effectively holding it horizontal, you would sort of push up with your thumbs and push down with the palms of your hand to apply a bending force to a straight member, for example. With an unloader, you're applying a three-point pressure in order to reduce the load in that compartment. Now, that can be done in a variety of different ways, and different bracing companies do it in many different ways. And effectively, these kind of boil down to a push or a pull. So you're either pushing with a hinge or you're pulling with a strap, for example. And the important thing to consider with that is the underlying structures and the surface area that you're applying this through. So effectively, it's the same with all orthoses, spinal or whatever. The bigger surface area you have, the less point pressure you're going to apply. So with any brace, the ideal is, biomechanically, that you'd have a very large brace, very large surface area, and then the point pressures would be very low. However, if you wheel out a very large brace, the patients will not thank you for it. So it's about finding that balance. And in the case of an unloader one, for example, we use a strap setup with large shells in order to do that. And it's just, there's different ways of doing it, but it's about applying pressure on pressure tolerant surfaces rather than when I originally trained, you train in prosthetics and orthotics, and I always use this example, but if you're building a socket on a transtibial amputation, one of the things that you do is you avoid the bony bits and you push on the muscle bellies, these types of things. And it's a similar setup when you're using a medial unloader, for example. You want to apply pressure on pressure tolerant areas. Mm. You want to avoid putting pressure on areas that are sensitive.
So I suppose you're looking at a balance, as you just mentioned, between how much force can we apply to this area? Can we make that area as small as possible, but that increases the force?
Yes.
And then also the amount of force sort of in total. So I assume that you could make an unloader brace that provided almost no pressure and would be tolerated extremely well, but would do nothing, versus the opposite, where you could make an unloader brace which applied a hell of a lot of pressure.
Yep.
But wasn't tolerated. So I assume there's a butter zone somewhere.
Yes, exactly. And it's about finding that sweet spot between patient compliance, cosmesis. Mm-hmm. What does it look like? Is it big? Is it bulky? And also biomechanical function, because you could provide, from an engineering perspective, an incredible amount of force. The reality is we have lots of limiting factors. So the skin, the soft tissue, the muscles, these types of things. Patient-associated things that may influence that. So I've already mentioned about edema, neuropathy. But you know, these things will all influence how much pressure you can apply. So it's about finding that sweet spot between all of those factors.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about then the biomechanics of what's actually happening at the joint with these braces. So we're looking at and we talked prior to the recording, and I was under the impression, turns out potentially incorrectly, that the braces were applying the force, but it wasn't necessarily truly unloading the medial compartment, but was more of a neuromuscular, like we see in the foot. So a lot of the research for sort of foot orthoses, it doesn't really change the biomechanics of the foot, but it changes the sort of maybe the sensation or the way the muscles are functioning around the foot, and that kind of thing. So that was how I was under the impression with the knee braces.
Yeah.
But you were saying that might not be quite correct, and that's slightly different to that.
Yeah, so it's interesting you said before about a brace that applied a hell of a lot of force and isn't tolerated. So there was a study done a few years ago, but it's still a very valid one, but compared different types of braces. And this is one that we look at a lot. But effectively, that compared sort of a skiing style brace that pushes via the hinge, and you effectively change the angle of the thigh and tibial component to apply that pressure. It compared one, a pull style brace with dynamic force straps, like an unloader one, for example, and then more simple braces. And they looked at what load was going through that compartment. And they actually found that with an unloader style orthosis, there was a 15% load reduction. The interesting thing is they actually found with a more traditional style of brace with a hinges pushing, a push style brace, that they actually were able to elicit in the test a 17% load reduction. The reality was that wasn't tolerated. Mm. So it does change the load that's taken in that area. And it's about shifting that load line away from that medial compartment that normally in most knees is taking more force than the lateral. So taking it away from the affected painful area and trying to move it elsewhere.
Mm. And how is there a component of neuromuscular involvement as well, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. That, you know, there's always a massive proprioceptive element to it as well. studies with braces are always tricky to do because how do you placebo an orthosis? It is a tricky thing. So, yeah, I do think that there is both those elements to it as well. It's a combination of the two.
And just for my interest as much as anything else, how do they measure the what's the mechanics of measuring the force through the medial component?
So in that case, if it serves me correctly, they basically 3D modeled it. And then it can be done through cadaveric studies. There are people out there that have got instrumented knee replacements. So it is possible to do it that way. It's certainly something that as a company we've looked into in the past. But yeah, those are the main things, either modeling, cadaveric, or those are really the normal ways that it's done.
For sure. Cool. So from a symptomatic point of view, you talked about obviously the literal force on a symptomatic medial compartment. We know that generates symptoms in a couple of different ways, really, mostly through sensation as much as anything else. But what about the other components to osteoarthritis? So we know it's mainly a systematic or systemic inflammatory issue, which is going to generate the problem with the joint and end up with the, you know, reduced cartilage density, for want of a better turn of phrase. What are we seeing with regards to the symptoms from if you wear the braces for any period of time, if you then stop wearing the brace, does the symptoms all come back, or do we see people sort of, I suppose, accommodating to the brace is the wrong word, but improving sort of generally the sensitization of their knee because they've unloaded it for a short period of time?
So there's a lot of this area is kind of anecdotal. And I can only really go from feedback from patients that I see. So there's kind of a few elements to what you've talked about there. So do patients see longer term effects from the brace? Now, one area to look at this is, often when you see patients with medial compartment OA, they've got associated muscle wastage, often in the quads, these types of things. And often you will need to go back and see patients again with these braces because it's very common that we see changes in the musculature for the better. And, you know, they're starting to use their leg in a different way because they haven't got that so much of that antalgic side of things. So it takes a bit of time for the patient to get used to it. And it also, you know, over time, there will be changes in terms of how they walk and these types of things. The other thing is we often get asked by patients, you know, we were talking about this previously, but when should I wear it? What should I do with it? I always say you'll get the best out of it the more you wear it. That said, again, anecdotally, a lot of patients say that once they've been using it for a longer period of time, they actually, in effect, have a sort of hangover-ish. It's a negative word for a positive thing, but they're often saying that perhaps the nocturnal pain that they might have had before is not as much. And again, this is not something that's been investigated, but it's fairly reasonable to suspect that the normal level of damage and microtrauma that you might get through the day with the arthritic joint surface, if we're trying to take some of the load away from that area, you know, potentially you're not doing the level of damage is the wrong word, but the level of trauma during the day, therefore there are sort of knock-on benefits from there. So yeah.
Yeah, I think I usually sort of, I usually try and explain it. I'm quite a simple bloke. I usually try to explain it to people like, if you annoy the knee, it's annoyed. If you don't annoy the knee, it stops being so annoyed.
Yes.
And I wonder if that's got a bit of a component to it. But that from that point of view, I was then wondering, you know, when you then stop using the brace. So you have an aggravating activity, walking, for example. Use the brace, it aggravates it less. So walking's less aggravated, but then you stop using the brace and then walking's aggravating again. And sorry to interrupt you, I wonder if that's part of you. We talked about the physios saying about, you know, muscle wasting or whatever, but I wonder if that answers some of that question. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And it's kind of with these types of braces, it's not kind of necessarily in most people, normal use cases, it's not necessarily a short term thing. It's likely to be something that's going to be part of their management ongoing. And it's important to consider that. You know, I'm not saying that they're wearing these braces the rest of their life, but we have lots of patients that have worn them for many years. So I do think there is sort of a hangover effect. But, you know, the more you wear it, the more potential benefit you'll get from that. But you have to bring in the patient element to it. As I said, it can't fit in with every single activity all the time. So for a normal person, it's important that you use it to its own benefits and wear it sometimes and other times you don't.
I think I'm always keen to, when things sound good, I'm always keen to explore the phrase, too much of a good thing, it's not always good. Mm-hmm. And so part of my, something I've come to an understanding of in relatively recent history, last year, 2 years or so, was I did a podcast on osteoarthritis with Professor Tonya Vincent, and she was talking about how osteoarthritis occurs and what happens at a cartilage level. Mm-hmm. And my brain starts to fall out of my ears as soon as she starts talking about all the biochemistry that's going on. And it's, you know, very complicated. But one of the things that really struck me was she was talking about how load affects cartilage. Mm-hmm. And what she was saying was that perpendicular load into cartilage is what would stimulate chondrocytes, and in my simplistic way, not replace the cartilage, but it makes it denser, so it's got a bit of a cushioning effect.
Yeah.
Is there a risk of wearing the brace too much if it is truly offloading the cartilage, that you're then reducing that stimulating load? I don't know if I'm over extrapolating a little bit, but if you wore it all the time and you offloaded by 15%, mm-hmm. and then you're then not getting that perpendicular load, do you see where I'm going with this? It then potentially meaning you don't have so much dense cartilage. So for want of a better phrase, you are then reliant on the brace, because when you then take it off, you're then pushing down on less dense cartilage.
And you could look at this from a bone density point of view as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to say that, you know, the way the brace works, we're not getting fresh air between those two bony surfaces. There will be loading. One thing that perhaps is a limit of my knowledge is whether there's a, you know, you will have that axial loading, but you have the potential to have that for more activity for these types of things. And is it the reduction in the axial load that's not outweighed by the potential to do more? I don't know that answer, but it's not completely removing that load from that area. And it's kind of similar when you think of other orthoses, for example, like a walker boot, for example. Mm. One of the benefits of those types of things is the fact that you're able to weight bear and move relatively normally in suitable conditions, but under controlled situation. So the load is still going through that area. So from my limited understanding of, you know, I'm not about to profess about the cartilage histology, but I think there is likely to be enough load that you would get that level of stimulation. And, you know, that could be compensated more by more activity in a lot of patients.
Yeah, I suppose it comes back to what we were saying before, doesn't it? Is 85% of 2 hours going to compensate for 100% of 1 hour? Mm. Like, I think that's probably an important distinction, isn't it, in this component. And I don't know why, but I still struggle to believe, I suppose, is the right turn of phrase, that the brace can produce that much of a 15% offload, mm-hmm. to the medial compartment, just because my understanding of the forces through the knee are so great.
Yeah.
And this is going to bring me on to my next line of questioning, mm-hmm. really is. Part of me just go, and I don't have knee osteoarthritis, so admittedly I don't have that experience to say,
yes,
I will tolerate this thing to make that other thing better. Mm-hmm. So part of me goes, you know, I think walking downstairs is like 4 times body weight through the knee, isn't it? So like, and I'm then like, well, 15% of that is still a heck of a lot of force, mm-hmm. to be offloading through the medial joint. So then medial compartment of the joint. So then that's a lot of force through the brace. That's going to be uncomfortable. And that's what I hear a lot of from people who, not people that with the brace on, but with clinicians,
yeah,
is that the braces are great, but they're not tolerated that well. And I know that's a generalized to all braces probably. Mm-hmm. So I suppose my next line of questioning is, I'm going to park my my slight disbelief and I'm going to believe you being the expert. Fine, I'm not going to, let's not go over there. But my next line of question is like, let's talk about tolerance.
Yes.
So what can we, well, actually let's walk it back. What does the brace do? We talked about it a little bit, but what does the brace do to improve tolerance now in newer braces comparative to the ones you were talking about a long period of time ago?
So in older style of braces, they were not designed from the ground up to do these type of things. They were designed to be controlling. So you're wanting to control the knee in terms of motion. And that would be, in the case of a ligament brace, you're wanting to try and prevent that degree of anterior tibial shift. If you're designing a brace from the ground up for a specific use case, so in this case, influencing the medialateral forces that are going to the knee, you are able, therefore, to take out all of the extra bits that can cause problems. So in the case of, you know, some unloading braces, they, you know, the unloaded one, for example, has a single hinge on one side. And that hinge is actually designed to be very flexible. And that's quite alien to a lot of people. They think the brace is quite flimsy. But in reality, it's about thinking about where that force is applied. So in this case, the hinge goes on the same size as the shells. The shells are applying the force. The straps don't actually need to be sort of rigid and strong. They need to be strong in terms of tension. So you mentioned about how can it apply that level of force? How can it truly influence that? All we're relying on in this sort of pull method is the tensile strength of straps. In that, the straps themselves have a very large surface area. So if you think about two complete straps wrapping all the way around the leg, anything to anything on that side will be a large surface area for applying that force. So the result of two large shells and two large straps means that you actually have quite a large surface area for applying that force. The other thing is about thinking when you're applying that force as well. So we're sat here. If I had knee OA, I wouldn't want an unremitting force on my knee because I'm not weight bearing. I'm not applying load through my knee and my knee's probably not hurting that much. And in reality, if you think about the knee in flexion, the area affected by the osteoarthritis is really in the last sort of 20 to 10 degrees. That's where you've got the most effect on the cartilage. So effectively what the brace does is as you flex, that force is reduced so that we're not getting that application while we're sat in a flex position.
Perfect. And a large part of me wonders about, you know, like you say, if we put one of these offloaders on me, I bet I'd find it very uncomfortable, but I don't have medial knee osteoarthritis. So do you think sometimes there's a little bit of a lesser of two evils where you're putting a little bit of discomfort in, but it's offsetting a lot of discomfort? Or am I just feeling like it's going to be uncomfortable because I'm thinking of having that force applied to my knee?
So I think discomfort is probably a strong term.
Okay.
Just because if they were uncomfortable, patients wouldn't wear them.
Yeah.
And I know there is an element of I'll put up with it a little bit because of the benefits. But in reality, it's important that we're making something that is very, very comfortable. The thing, and we're always very much talking about whenever you put a new orthosis on, and this is kind of true for any orthosis really, with the exception of, I don't know, spinal brace where you shouldn't do this, but it's important to build up the time you wear it slowly. And that has a variety of functions. It makes your skin used to it. It makes you used to it. So in terms of your perception and the proprioception of that. And it's just about building that sort of tolerance and that feeling up. Also as well, it's about you getting to know what the brace does and trusting the efficacy of it, really. And that does take a little bit of time. But They're not, you know, we do everything we can to make them comfortable. So I understand it, and I certainly think historically that was the thing. There are plenty of sort of brutal historic braces out there, but I think that's kind of a thing that's sort of been engineered out over time. So yeah, that said, it is something you have to put on. You may have to do some degree of maintenance during the day, whether that's, you know, if you've got any volume changes, or you might have to tighten a strap, or you can actually, with some of them, you can increase or decrease how much their force they're applying, for example, mm-hmm. Which can be very useful if you're doing an activity that might irritate your knee. But the difficulty with that is you have to actually take that. You have to do that adjustment. You have to apply that adjustment. So it is tricky. It is something where you have to have a degree of motivation to use. If you're expecting it to be kind of take this pill, that's it, that's you for the day, it's not that. Yeah. With an orthosis, it requires patients to be engaged. But it's an interesting thing. When I first started fitting them, you kind of think, well, people have said to me before, you put them on and the patient, you know, has a positive reaction to it. And you think with OA, that's probably not going to happen just because it's a chronic condition. But the reality is, very commonly you'll fit these types of braces. And I always advocate that the patient goes and finds some steps, a slope, the things that normally cause them problems. And very commonly you will actually see that they will feel a difference sort of then and there. And that's a really interesting thing. For me as an orthotist, I'm used to saying, right, take these shoes, these orthoses, we'll see you in maybe 6 weeks and see how things have gone. And over that time, you may see a benefit. But with these types of braces, you can often see that very quickly. Mm. And that kind of is borne out in some of the research as well. So there've been a few studies looking at WOMAC scores, these types of things. And they actually found that the beneficial effects was felt within, you know, a very quick period of time, rather than it being sort of a, you know, use it for 3 months and then you will start to see an effect. Mm. That actually has been borne out that you will see it relatively soon and that's maintained.
And that would probably push back against my disbelief, if that's a way of using double negative, in that if you are truly unloading the joint, that's going to be quite quick response. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you were, if it was neuromuscular and you were settling the joint, for want of a term, that's going to be a lot slower. So I think that probably would be reassuring data against that disbelief, in inverted commas, for me.
And the other thing as well is it's a non-invasive intervention.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like this is something where you're going in and changing the joint or whatever. You can try these types of intervention in combination with other things. If it doesn't work, you know, there's a cost incurred, but there's no, you're still at the same situation that you were before. So it's about using these types of interventions in the most appropriate patients for the most appropriate sort of activities. Yeah. and suitability. But you don't really lose anything by trying them, to be honest.
It's a bit more reversible than a knee replacement.
Exactly.
Taking a brace off. So I would want to stick on tolerance for a minute with the people that come back to me and say, oh, my patients don't tolerate it. So I'm going to guess one piece of advice would be they're probably not building up. Yeah. Slowly. So first off, patient comes in, most of their pain's on walking, give them a medial unloader brace, they're reasonably happy. What would be a average type of protocol that you would build up the use of that brace?
So I used to work in a hospital that was very close to a very large shopping center. And you'd always get these patients come back and you'd give them foot orthoses, for example. And they say, right, well, I put them on and then I went around the shopping center for 3 hours and my feet hurt. Yeah. And it's kind of like that, to be honest. So what we would generally say is perhaps wear it for 2 hours on the first day. But be careful about your activity level, because it can be tricky. You do get these patients like, this is great, I'm gonna go
do
anything, whatever. And I'm always very careful to advise against these types of things. You need to spend time building up your wearing time. Mm-hmm. You need to spend time building up your activity levels, and even vocationally as well. People say, right, I can go to work with this on or whatever. We don't normally recommend that straight away. Spend, you know, 2 hours the first day and slowly increase that over time, both wearing time and activity level as well. But I would generally say within a couple of weeks, someone's normally able to wear it for longer periods of time and do most of the activities that they would normally want to do. But lots of, if you're ever likely to have a problem, it's likely to be, you know, not wearing them in correctly. We provide leaflets to sort of help guide people on this sort of thing, or fitting issues. So not fitting it correctly, these types of things. And that really falls on us as a manufacturer of braces. We should design in the fact that it should be easy to wear. We should also try and support you with, and your patients, with making sure, firstly, you as a clinician fit it correctly. But then also the patient has the support they need to continue that. We do things like patient booklets, full of pictures, these types of things, or fitting videos. And we try and plaster these as much as we can so that people can see them and approach them. Because you don't want that patient coming back in for you to adjust a simple strap that perhaps they could have fixed themselves or whatever. It's that kind of process, and it's important to be really open with the patient that they need to wear it in slowly, they need to get used to it, and you have patients at both ends of the spectrum with that.
Yeah, I can imagine someone goes, oh, it's not so painful now, I'm fixed or whatever it is, and then really go and overdo it, and get then the inflammatory component kicks in, and next day they really suffer for it. So I can imagine seeing that. One thing I wanted to talk about was obviously, I'm guessing these aren't a blanket, everybody with medial OA should get a offloader brace. So are there any other than the, you know, tissue tolerance parts, are there any patients that you find just any reasons they just don't do well with an offloader brace?
Effectively with a brace, we're applying pressure through the skin and the underlying structures. So if you have someone where that is compromised in some way, so I've already mentioned edema, I've already mentioned neurological deficits, for example. But it can also extend to, scar tissue, for example. It can be to do with, psoriasis or whatever. But it's about thinking about where those areas are and will the brace potentially irritate it. Mm-hmm. So it's important to think about that. Also, as well, with the patient group, potentially they're from more elderly populations, for example. So as we get older, the skin becomes thinner, these types of things. Not a contraindication, but considering the patient as a whole and how likely they are to tolerate that pressure. Also other groups as well, is if the deformity is too great, for example, or they're just a very unusual shape. There are ways of getting around this, but we would generally say sort of 10 to 15 degrees of varus or valgus is as far as you can possibly go. But equally, there are some really unusual shaped legs out there, and you can go down a custom brace route, but that can make it tricky. And also from a clinician's point of view, that can make it tricky in terms of fitting. And we would, you know, always want to support people with that and help and try and make things as easy as possible.
And any particular sort of features of a patient that might make it really difficult, like particularly tall, particularly short, that kind of thing, or is it generally you can get around that?
Particularly short is probably a limitation, just because it depends on what you're doing. But if it's a custom brace, some custom braces can be made longer or shorter. Some can be made any length. Others are made from standardized components, so the length may be fixed. So that can be tricky, just because you run into problems, perhaps. On the medial side, you might run into problems with clearance for the groin, for example. That's probably one limitation. Too tall is not necessarily a problem. The only issue with that is about relative mechanical advantage. If I was 7 foot tall and you were 5 foot tall, mechanically, your unloader brace that was the same length as mine would be mechanically be applying more, have a bigger lever arm for your leg than mine would, because that 40 to 50 centimeter brace is only a tiny proportion of my leg if I was so tall.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is it's still an applying a beneficial effect. So being too tall is not necessarily a problem. It's just proportions of the brace relative to my size, if you see what I mean.
Mm, for sure. The other one I was thinking of, and I'm going to say force that goes through the knee, and I'm not necessarily thinking about body weight, although that would probably come into it, but I'm also thinking about people who put a lot of force through the knee. So I'm guessing at some point the brace is not able to, like, if you there's a limitation to the brace of how much force it can resist.
Yes.
So either they're lifting very heavy weights, like you say, occupationally,
mm-hmm.
Or they do weigh a lot. So that when they come downstairs, is there a tolerance line that you've noticed, or are they? Is it usually that actually the skin is the issue before the brace doesn't hold that force, if that makes sense?
So I think probably that comes down to brace selection.
Okay.
So if you have your approach that you would take to a very slight patient would be slightly different from one who has a high BMI, for example. And activity level comes into this. But it's important to consider the patient as a whole. The first thing is, will the brace fit in those very small or very big? The second is, what activity levels are they going to be doing? If they're relatively sedentary, we might use something very different from if they're highly active. And you kind of have to take all of those factors into consideration, and that's to do with appropriate brace prescription. And there are different ways of approaching that. So if, you know, taking the very large patients as a good example, in some ways they do present quite a challenge because there's potentially a lot of soft tissue that we have to think about. But in reality, they're a very interesting patient group to consider because they may not necessarily be suitable for surgery. They may not have a lot of options available to them because of the problems associated with their size. So we do have a lot of patients that actually use bracing sort of preoperative phase almost as sort of prehab, but also we have quite a lot of perhaps larger patients that use it as a way of them potentially allowing them to be more active with the hope of influencing their weight, with the hope of potentially going on to surgery, for example. So it is a bit of a swing and roundabout situation, but appropriate brace prescription is really the key to it, I think. And patient selection, don't fit them on everybody. consider the patient as a whole. Consider the positives and negatives of their situation. And with some people, it's absolutely the right thing to say, do you know what? I don't think you necessarily want this. And I don't think you'll necessarily get on with it. The last thing we want is for someone to be giving a brace and them not using it. And, you know, it really boils down to patient selection and picking the most appropriate orthosis to fit the patient holistically.
Yeah, for sure. I think from my point of view, again, when I teach about some of this stuff, I find the hesitancy is from the healthcare professional. Do you find similar? I feel like the physios and osteos and stuff, they want to push the bracing down the list, mm-hmm. and they want to prefer things like education, exercise, weight loss, those kinds of interventions over the brace. Do you find similar, or?
I think there's a lot of historic opinions on, and it's tricky, bracing as a collective term lumps in so many different things. And it can be, you go do park run, for example, as I do, and I see a variety of straps and things on people's legs. And, you know, those are clubbed in with braces. But in reality, some of them do absolutely nothing and others do more things. And I think that's a limitation of bracing as a whole because they're all different. They all do different things. And as you said earlier, kind of an unloader from a functional point of view is very different than perhaps a simple strap or whatever. And I think sort of combating that or thinking about that, the important thing to consider is all of those things you mentioned before should be considered with this as an intervention as well. So wearing a brace will not have any negative effect at all on your physiotherapy input. You could argue that influencing the pain would actually give you benefits from that. You could use walking aids if you want to. Those can be done with a brace. And really what I think is more important for people to do is consider how these types of interventions can be used together in order to get the best outcome. I think that's more like to be more effective for the patient.
Perfect. Yeah. I think I try and push the bracing slightly higher up people's like you say, it's here's the list of options, and their sort of relative effectiveness. What, because we know that, like you said, if you try and use one intervention on osteoarthritis, then it won't work. No. Pretty much irrelevant of which one it is. And I think keeping it within the options that are provided to the patient, I think, is a really good option.
And I feel that there's been a real shift in recent times. So historically, kind of surgery was the gold standard, and that was what patients push for, and to some extent that was what clinicians push for, and it's so much more definitive, and it absolutely has a fantastic role to play again in the right patient. So it really is about thinking about what conservative measures can be used, how they can be used together to potentially manage that patient before surgery, or potentially hopefully prevent that patient from requiring that surgery. And again, there have been some studies done on this, looking at whether the use of an unloader style brace is cost effective and effective in patients that are waiting for surgery. And it is something that has had a positive outcome with that. They do find that it gives similar benefits at 8-year follow up to a total knee replacement. So.
Yeah, you've just gone on to answer my last question, which was the sticky question of cost, because they are relatively expensive. We mentioned about, a sleeve. I could go around the corner to the chemist and I could buy a sleeve for anywhere from about £4 to about, you could go on the internet and find one for a few hundred, couldn't you? A neoprene type sleeve. Mm-hmm. And these are obviously more expensive than that. So you've just sort of answered that question, and they have been shown to be cost effective. Mm-hmm. They are obviously going to be cost prohibitive to some individuals, and that's always going to be the case with some interventions that require cost. But just to elaborate on the cost effectiveness a little bit, do you find in your experience with patients who, are they umming and ahhing over, should I pay out this money for the brace? And I know sometimes it's on insurance and that kind of thing, but I'm talking about self-paying patients, really, if that's possible. And then coming back going, okay, I'm glad I did spend that money. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. And something, so as a company, OSSA UK, with an unloader, for example, we have sort of a 30-day money back guarantee with it. And effectively, if the patient comes back and says, this isn't for me, we will accept the brace back at no cost for the brace. The clinician is free to charge whatever treatment time or whatever. But we actually, our returns with that, I don't know the recent figures, but our returns in that instance is, I think it was 2.3% a couple of years ago. Mm. So it's important that people are reassured with that. There is a cost associated with it. And you mentioned about private paying or with insurance. Some of the insurers now, and AXA is a perfect example, are really progressive with considering these types of interventions. So if as a private practitioner, normally you are able to charge for your treatment time, but not necessarily the orthosis, insurers like AXA are fully covering these types of interventions, because they can see from the research, they can see from the results that actually patients are wanting to have something conservative that will benefit them rather than necessarily going down that surgical route. So there has been a definite shift recently. And equally, unloader braces are used in a bit of a variety of different situations as well. So it's not necessarily purely osteoarthritis. There are they are sometimes used in terms of a preoptive assessment tool for high tibial osteotomies, unicompartmental knee replacements, for example, because you're in effect applying a similar sort of biomechanical effect that the surgery later will do. So they're often used as that kind of almost a predictor of outcomes for those types of situations. Equally, they can be very useful in patients who've got degenerative meniscal pathologies as well, something that's, you know, very tricky to manage, especially from a physio point of view. You know, if we're able to affect the load on that degenerative meniscus, it can potentially be beneficial.
Perfect. Brilliant. I found the conversation absolutely fascinating. It's really, you know, genuinely interesting to me, this area. And I think there is a lot of places for it to go with, you know, tinkering with the braces, for example, and the customization of them and that offloading. We've not even touched on the other component, like the lateral compartment or multi-compartment. I think there are lots of options, which is great. Just the final bit for you personally, anywhere that people can find more information, social media, anywhere you want to direct them for more information, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we have sort of a variety of different platforms that we have these things in. I think key things is with using braces is leveraging things like user fitting videos and clinician fitting videos, these types of things. Obviously, we have sort of Instagram and Facebook and these types of things as well. So there's lots of information out there. And I think it's good for people to see how these things work and really want people to consider the mechanics of what they're doing, because they're, you know, we talked about less effective orthoses and more simple orthoses. Just think about how and what they're doing and how they're applying that force. So
brilliant, absolutely brilliant to chat to you. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm sure we'll end up revisiting similar conversations in the future.
Thank you very much.
Well, I am delighted with that episode. One of my favourite ones to record so far. Really good chat with Giles. He certainly knows his stuff, and he certainly knows medial offloader braces. As I alluded to within the podcast, I think there's definitely a role for these braces for the right person. And I think it's definitely an option, especially if patients have medial osteoarthritis and they want to have something to try to reduce the symptoms. It's certainly worth trying. And of course, as they mentioned, there's this money back guarantee. So the expense, yes, it is a factor and certainly will be cost prohibitive for some patients. But if there's a money back guarantee, then it is worth a try for a number of patients. And hopefully we will see some improvements in their symptoms. We're going to be using this in our clinic in Choose Health. So certainly something we are going to back to a degree in the right person alongside really good graduated rehab as well. So we're going to be using those braces. As I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, please do check OSSA out. So you can go to OSSA.com, or if you click the link in the show notes, it will take you to more information about their Unloader 1X brace. If you want further information or you want to ask questions of OSSA themselves, then you can email ukinfo@ossa.com. And there's also a phone number in the show notes as well, if that would be your preference. As far as Physio Matters stuff goes, we've got more podcasts on the horizon. And don't forget, you can also access our library. Just go to library.physio-matters.com/register and you can join the biggest and best MSK library just for the measly sum of £15 a month, and you'll get access to well over 500 videos. You can map it if you are doing advanced practice portfolio, and also you get free tickets to all of our events that we run as well. So I have been delighted to do this episode and super excited to do the sign out as well, which is a rarity for me these days. You've been listening to the Physio Matters podcast, discussing physio matters, because physio matters. Bye for now.